CJ on the Welcome TV. To the One Up Revenue Podcast, podcast for cross-functional sales team, whether you're in sales, marketing, or customer success. This one goes out to all the hustlers on the phones, each and every day, slugging it out. Whether you're adding net new logos, expanding revenue from your sold base, or renew existing accounts, we're here for one thing and one thing only, to drive revenue. One Up! I'm your host, Jackson Lil, a top funnel sales dev strategist and an everyday frontline practitioner. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy the show. Five, four, three, two, one. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the One Up Revenue Podcast. For one of the opening themes, we have a special guest for us on today. It is a respected individual who I've been following for quite some time now. He originally started as an analyst, someone who loves to spot patterns, someone who's like to spot trends, and he works his way up the ranks. Currently right now, he is an advisor for Scratchpad. Advisor for Sona, Webstack. He's also the host of the Revenue Architect podcast, co-chapter head of LX Pavilion, channel chair of the Sales Enablement Community, ex-RevOps over at Upkeep, ex-RevOps go-to-market strategies and ops over at Patient Pop, ex-head of Revenue Ops over at Next Trucking, and ex-sales operation lead over at AWS. And for those who doesn't know, that's Amazon Web Services. And now, welcome back to the SaaS game, head of sales up over at Forethought, a Series C SaaS startup, Jeff Ignacio. Oh, shit.
Hey, Jackson. Appreciate you having me on. That was a long-winded intro. I feel like I've had many lifetimes based on that intro.
Jeff, welcome to the One Up Revenue Podcast, man. Thank you for coming on and sharing your insights and strategy and your story. We've been following for quite some time, and I know we connected a while back, like prior to just starting at Upkeep, from my mentor, Chris Orlano. Shout out to you, Chris. But welcome to the show. We appreciate you being here. We can't wait to learn from you in terms of, you know, early stage SaaS startups, RevOps, and, you know, just go-to-market strategy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like we can take this anywhere you want to go. I know we had an agenda, but I feel like it'd just be great for you to ask me, pepper me with a bunch of questions, and whatever your audience wants to hear, I'll try to answer it.
Oh yeah. First things first. So we know you originally started as an analyst, right? Over at Accenture. What's your story? How did you get in the back end when it comes to the SaaS world, if that makes sense, the early stage SaaS startups?
So I think the first time I had actually joined a real SaaS company was Google, actually. I had a career before that. I was in business school. So before business school, let's back up a little bit. I was doing technology consulting with Accenture. So working with large conglomerates, I primarily was assigned to the technology, media, and technologies and telecommunications, what they call the TMT group. So living in LA, I got the chance to work at Warner Brothers, Sony Pictures, and we were putting on-prem software like SAP together in accounting departments at these movie studios, doing all sorts of really interesting projects. I'd gone into sales. I went into consulting sales, so starting selling some implementation projects primarily for Microsoft services. And then I went into business school. I figured I didn't want to be in I didn't want to wear the bag anymore. I didn't want to be in sales. I figured there's more to my career that I wanted to go into. And so in business school, I decided to go take my first path into finance. And so Intel was a great opportunity for me. I took a job there. And at Intel, I helped learn, I kind of learned the ins and outs of helping to run kind of a large business from a finance perspective. And then I took those learnings to Google. And Google was interesting because I didn't work in the ads business, which is the lion's share of the revenue at the time. And so I was working in what was called a group called Google Enterprise, and that it was essentially a horizontal sales channel that offered its sales resources to these vertical product lines. So Google Apps, Google Maps, Chromebook, Google Cloud, which is one of the largest providers now, was a competitor to my most recent employer. And my role there was helping to support the sales organization. So I was the FP&A partner to sales. And it was really interesting working in SaaS, because the business model is fundamentally different from creating, you know, silicon and hardware. And so we were selling essentially really interesting software that had extremely high profit margins. And you start to look at your, you know, your monthly recurring revenue, you're getting paid in small amounts every month, but it starts to add up, especially if customers start to renew with you.
Got it. Okay. So you originally started doing consulting, right? And you move over to the Google side of the world. You kind of figured out how things work. You're on a more horizontal side in terms of sales, like hardware, and then Google Cloud and stuff. And then you figured out a way to just basically transfer your expertise onto the next level ongoing.
Yeah, I think it's I don't know if I had expertise going in, but you know, these companies gave me an opportunity and made the most of that opportunity, right? So like at Google, I learned quite a few things. I learned, you know, I was in sales before. So, you know, I was always thinking about, how do I find my next prospect? How do I go through a discovery call? How do I set up my next touch point? And how, you know, basically put myself in this role of a sales rep. But in the finance role, I was looking at the sales organization from a macro picture, right? I wasn't looking at the trees, I was looking at the forest. Essentially, we were thinking about, what are our sales targets? How do we get to those sales targets? What should be the revenue target per product line, per geography, per segment? And you're essentially modeling what could happen on paper. And so in sales finance, I'm particularly looking at forecasting, setting up some of the productivity metrics that are going to be relevant to us achieving those goals. And then that's when I had my opportunity to work with sales operations. The sales operations folks were developing like initiatives, programs. They were running the cadences that helped lead the business to those outcomes, while I in finance was, you know, sort of projecting on paper what the business could perform to. So very different. I think the biggest takeaway for me at Google was, you know, working in a highly regimented, a great operating environment, and then also getting a chance to be exposed to sales operations.
Ah, okay, okay. So we take a step back down. Originally, you started as frontliner, bam, carrying a bag, you're doing your own sales and stuff. And then you decide to take a step back, and then it's like, wait a minute, what can we do on our end to support the frontline here? Typically, the finance side is like, you're now forecasting, and there's also the operational side where you're running the cadences on the side to help the frontline reach their goals, but you're more of like the projection goal. And we're guessing that's how you got to where you're at today in terms of RevOps and stuff.
So RevOps is interesting, right? So let's back up. So I left Google and I moved into sales analytics and sales operations. There are many pathways into sales operations or RevOps today. So I came from a finance background, but I also had a sales background. It's not necessarily the most common pathway, but it does help you. It did help me in a number of regards. It helped me understand unit economics, helped me develop quotas, comp plans, forecasting processes. What I didn't have was the technology piece. I did not know Salesforce. I did not know HubSpot. All the things that today I think a lot of folks would consider as the core infrastructure of revenue operations, I didn't have that skill set. And so I had to pick it up along the way. And so when I moved from sales ops to revenue operations, it was because of I actually positioned myself to a company, and you worked there, Upkeep. They gave me an opportunity to run revenue operations. Now, revenue operations is different from sales operations, right? But they overlap significantly. So sales operations, your world begins when, you know, sales touches or engages with the prospect, and it ends when the sale is completed. Essentially, that's the you know, the universe or the boundaries that you're working within. Now, obviously, you're going to be a good partner, and you're going to have relationships with your marketing partners and your customer success teams, your product teams. There's obviously that cross-functional nature, but for the most part, your remit is within that sales universal boundaries. Now, revenue operations is an end-to-end experience from the time a prospect becomes aware of you all the way to the time they become a customer, renew, and they evangelize you to others. So it's an end-to-end support an end-to-end relationship with the customer. And it's very different. And so thinking about those two constructs and organizations, I'm seeing more and more companies starting to consider revenue operations as a piece of their business as opposed to just sales ops.
Okay. So just to confirm, sales ops is pretty much from beginning to end in terms of the first touch point, the sales professionals, whether it's marketing, sales development, sales, and then until the end where they sign. But RevOps, it's pretty much end-to-end function from the entire cycle beginning to end to even where they start becoming the raging fans and want to like promote you and recommend you, things like that.
I like the way you put it. That's exactly right.
Oh, man. Learn something new. Thank you for that. Jeff, you're known as, I remember when we first met, and this is shout out to Ryan Chan, by the way, from Upkeep. Thank you for doing what you do. Appreciate it. Obviously, you gave both of us. You're known as RevOps, guys. I know you kind of just explained it too. So let's say this is a brand new SaaS startup founder, right? They coming from a specific industry vertical where they have like 10, 15 plus years, they were an engineer, maybe they were doing product, whatever, they found a gap. And they decided to say, you know what, screw this, we're gonna build something out. And they fulfilled it. And when would it be applicable to find someone such as yourself to bring in as like a RevOps professional? When is it, you know, appropriate to come in? And what exactly, like, if you can, I know you stated clear too, is like sales ops for more from front end sales beginning to close. But what exactly is RevOps and when is it applicable for early stage SaaS startups?
So I think there's a number of ways to answer this, right? So let's start with this a marketing selling motion, and then we'll answer with a kind of a product motion. So typically, if you're launching a company, the very first thing you're doing is you're building a product, and you're essentially building that product or service to solve a need in the marketplace, and that's what most folks would consider product market fit. Now, early on, you were probably co-building your solution while serving a customer. They're called design customers for the most part. These design customers are not necessarily your future customers, but they're helping you craft and co-build the vision for what your product could be. When you have product market fit is when whatever you have built is actually useful for a larger audience of companies. And so it becomes, you know, quote unquote, sticky. If you took it away, it would negatively impact your business. And these are things that, you know, you can use different metrics to realize if it's sticky or not, or if you've achieved that product market fit. Now, the next thing you want to do is not necessarily sequentially, but maybe in parallel, start to develop your go-to-market program. And so oftentimes what I see is the founder is going out and actually selling. Founder-led selling is kind of the term that folks use. And so you'll notice that the customers you bring in are, you know, investor introductions, maybe they're friends and family. And you actually have a very high close rate. Why? Because you're the founder, you know the space really well. But once you start to, you know, bring in a sales team, then, you know, those sales reps are not the founder. They don't know the space as well because they didn't build the product, they didn't build a service, they didn't, you know, put their back up against the wall and build this company. And so that's where, you know, you start to consider, okay, how do I start to scale this? So early on, you might hire one sales rep. That sales rep might be the director of sales, but they're really a director. They're not really leading a team. It's just one person. That person is essentially crafting what the prospecting tactics and approach is going to be. Second, it's they're tweaking the messaging. They're taking what the founder told them and starting to come up with, you know, how do I build the hook? How do I engage with prospects? Third is, you know, what does the sales process look like? Like, how do buyers actually buy this type of service? If you're doing SaaS, the playbook's well known. You know that you go through a demo, custom demo. You start doing some sort of needs analysis. You put together a solution, a proposal. You negotiate and you close. And for the most part, that's true for an enterprise sales cycle. And then for a SMB quick sales cycle, you know, you're showing the product. You're going for the close. You demonstrate pricing. You go for the close, and you can get signature within 1 to 7 days. Low ACV, high velocity sales. Where I think you need RevOps is when you start to see that you figured some things out, you know your product, you know your messaging, you know what the sales process could look like. Now you need it to scale. So you bring in someone in either marketing operations or sales operations, depending on where the need is greatest. But ideally, you have someone that at least can roll up sleeves and get the work done. You don't necessarily need someone that's going to build a high-level strategy. You just need someone to go in and build it out tactically. In a PLG motion, it's actually very different because a product-led growth motion, a user signs up for a free trial or signs up for a freemium motion, and they actually have access to your product, either a full suite, the full suite or a partial version of it. And then after some time expires, they get hit by a paywall. Paywall doesn't have to be an actual live touch point with a sales rep. It could just be in the application, which gives them a call to action to submit their credit card and close with you. Now, rep ops doesn't seem it's important there because most people think of rep marketing ops and sales ops, but it's all there. So you have a CRM system, presumably in your back end. You have data metrics that are connected through some sort of other technical schema. And so you can get by with an engineering team, but at the end of the day, some sort of rev ops team is going to be needed there because you definitely want to at least analyze what's happening in your product funnel and then figuring out what are those touch points and those indicators that would then require a growth team or a coupon that comes in for via the app.
Jeff, hold on. Let me pick your brain here. So what happens when a company starts to scale and they don't bring in like a RevOps professional? What kind of challenges would typically arise, and what is the negative outcome for not having someone else yourself in there, if that makes sense?
So I personally think you can still grow without RevOps, without sales ops, just on the backing of having incredible product market fit. Also, your customers might rave and rant about you. So, you know, you're just going to continue to create that flywheel. So you're always going to have that demand. Now, let's say you're not the lucky customer, not the lucky company that has, you know, intense and incredible tailwinds. What you'll end up seeing is decelerating growth. So you could still grow, but your growth rates are going to decelerate. And here's the reason why. Your unit economics become woefully inefficient. Because your sales cycles take longer than they could be. You're missing a significant piece of the market because you're not targeting correctly. Your systems also they also encumber you from running a seamless process. So I think there's a number of areas where a sales team or a marketing team could be impacted, right? You're not servicing all of your TAM or your SAM. Second, your process itself takes too long. And then three, you're essentially operating quite blind, right? So I always think that, you know, you can get these increased conversion rates all throughout your funnel by making small tweaks with bringing in operational scale.
Oh, okay. Okay, to take a step back. So basically we have the whole entire cross-functional sales team, right? We have marketing, we have sales, we have CX, but it's RevOps, it's like the coach in the back end staring at the team and adapting it just as accordingly, little minor tweaks here, little minor tweaks there. And what it means for the customer and the buyer's journey is that, hey, rather than maybe taking 2 weeks to get a response for a questionnaire, you could probably get it within 3 days. Maybe it's someone who's just trying to get a quote that just wants to buy right away, has a better buying experience with the company, competitor X, because they provided a better experience, or maybe it's they got two things faster. And RevOps basically like the coach and said, hey, we should strategize. Here's our total addressable market. Maybe this is a specific vertical we should shoot for. Bam, bam, we test drive, reverse engineer, bam, bam, and just like going at it. But you're basically the back end coach, right? Is that fair to say, kind of?
I think folks can view RevOps as the back end or administration, like the people behind the curtain.
Like facility mains.
No. I think in it's some ways
it's a pun. It's an upkeep pun.
Yeah, I think in some ways RevOps can be in the front, right? So if you have a seamless process, it just works. Like the fewer complaints you hear from sales reps, it to me sounds like things are working. Second thing is, if you are, a revenue operator that's helping out with the sales strategy, you're essentially defining, you know, what markets are we selling into? What's an ICP? What personas are we going after? And then figuring out how to get the systems to make sure that it operates within your process, not that your process works around your systems. So you want to make sure that, you know, in some ways you're setting up the process, the enablement, the advisory, and the systems to work harmoniously for the go-to-market engine to work well, I mean.
Sorry to cut you off. It's also what they meant, like the flywheel, they call it, right? Is that what you're talking about too?
Yeah, I think flywheels are great, right? Like most people think cradle to grave, end to end customer lifecycle, it suggests that there's an end. It suggests that, you know, it starts from the time they become aware of you to the time that they close win to become customer. But in reality, it's a flywheel, right? So like, let's say, for example, if you close win, a year goes by in their annual contract, they decide to renew. Now that renewal, they can say that person who's your champion could probably take another job and then buy again at their new company, or they could, you know, basically evangelize you, talk about how great your solution is to others, and eventually bring in referrals or new customers. That's the flywheel.
Jeff Nasio, everybody. Are you Filipino? I think I asked you this before. Are you?
Yeah, I'm half.
Oh, sure. All right. Well, I'm Vietnamese, man. So I was like, okay, this guy looks.
Yeah, it's my last name. You probably think. Is this guy like Spanish or?
See.
Yeah.
Just before we move over to the quick next question, I know our time's like almost running out too, but so before we hop into P's, I want to chat about like market validation. You know, they talk about throwing out to see what sticks, like for early stage SaaS startups, when they want to prove to the board or a potential investor, what exactly is market validation and how do they prove that?
So it depends on who you're talking to, right? You're talking about a startup, and startup has multiple phases. So you probably hear about this a lot on VC podcasts, and I'm not a venture capitalist, but I am an operator. So for someone that is a seed round, you're thinking, you know, do you have a product, right? You have more than just a slide deck. Do you actually have a product, and you have a vision for the problem that you're trying to solve, and you have a crystal clear vision of who your customer could be. And so you're essentially trying to build an app and then, or a product and have a couple of users on board. Now VCs, some of them are mission aligned. So if you're solving something and a mission that they tend to fund, then they'll take a serious look. So these thesis driven VCs, you get to later stage, you're starting to prove that you have some revenue, right? Revenue is, the first market, some of the market validation that would say someone's willing to open up their wallet and essentially pay you for your service. Now, if that's true, then the question is, could you scale that? Is it just like one customer that's out there that could pay you for this issue? Or is it a wider set of customers? Like is the available market larger than this limited set? So what's that TAM? How big is the market? Then you get to these later stages and you've proven market fit, you have some initial revenue and the customers are more than just warm introductions. You actually have to go out and go generate cold business, either through paid marketing or going outbound. And that's kind of you're looking at your Series B, Series C, these larger startups. They might still be smaller revenue, but their valuations are larger. Their employee counts are starting to approach, you know, 100. And the question is, can you generate business at scale while also driving your unit economics downwards to favorable places? And those are the things that I look for when I'm thinking about a company. It's how large is the market opportunity? What's your ability to, you know, build a solution that can meet those needs? And then how do you operate the business? How do you execute from there?
Damn. Yeah, this is like amazing for me. Thank you, man. I'm like huge geek out on this. It's like insights and strategies I've been holding. Quick question, just before, to show respect for your time, before we head into like P's and, you know, wrap up, how are we doing on time? I know we originally booked till 5, and I know, you know, I just want to be respectful of your time.
Yeah, I can go over for a few minutes.
Okay. All right. Damn. Thank you so much for that. So market validation, will people open up their wallet? Okay, and then can we scale that? And then once they decide to go ahead and say, all right, cool, Now we're at 100 employees plus Series B. It's time to get down to business and just fire away. Let's talk about P's real quick here. I know this is like your pillars when it comes to RevOps. What exactly is P's and how can one make it actionable on their end to say they're looking for RevOps and you guys and they want to be cheap and they say, you know what, maybe I can try it on my end. What is P's and how does that work?
So you're referring to, there's this phrase that I've used that revenue operations helps essentially align strategy and execution like peas in a pod. And so P stands for process, enablement, advisory, and systems. So these are four pillars of success to any revenue operation function. So let's define each one of these one by one. So process are the end-to-end mechanisms that achieve specific outcomes. And so they could be large processes like top of funnel, generating qualified pipeline. They could be another pipeline. Another one would be executing sales pipeline, you know, generating new customers. And then there's these sub processes underneath each one of those. Top of funnel could be what's your campaign process? What's your lead scoring process? And everything you do in the business essentially rolls up to, you know, these macro processes, but you essentially can start tackling these micro ones. The second thing is enablement. So enablement is the ability to for the team to adopt and learn how to execute their craft. And so, for example, you might have sales training or CSM training or learning how to objection handle. You know, those are the enablement pieces that help make the team more successful. Now, advisory is the art and science of decision making. It's how do we help leaders make the best decisions. So typically it's a graduation from collecting data to analyzing the data to mining insights to driving recommendations and making decisions. And so as a revenue operator, it's not enough to say, hey, I need this report. It's okay, why are you asking that? What's the question you're trying to answer? Let's work backwards and solve your real need and try to get ahead of this and being proactive. Systems is the kind of the infrastructure, whether that's sales, whether that's assets like an objection guide, or it's a system like a technology like Salesforce or HubSpot. And so the systems piece can go from many ranges, from tactical execution and administration all the way to architecture and design. And so as you're thinking about, you know, what is your overall tech stack, what that could look like, everyone has their own opinion of it because it's probably based on their own experience. But at the end of the day, you decide for yourself, what is the minimum level of systemic architecture that can maximally provide what I need?
Oh, damn. Process, enablement, advisory, system, all in one, somehow, some way to articulate exactly, because everyone wants their own needs and stuff. Everyone came from their own experience. You know, I came from this company here. We did that. That's how we did over there. But how can we meet, you know, halfway? And Jeff, thank you again so much for coming on the One Up Revenue Podcast, man. Is there anything we missed that you wanted to share? Or is, you know, I just stopped there. I'll pause the ball. I'll give the ball to you.
No, not really. Just say thank you for the opportunity to come on to your podcast. I know you're starting a new role as well at the time of this recording. I hope you smash it. So good luck to you, brother.
Hey, thanks, man. Before we go, I want to let you know, too, it was one of many that had a play, and you're one of it included. And I thank you for that. And I'll stand here for this episode, dude. I was able to take a step back and position myself as an industry expert because from all this knowledge and stuff, and you definitely had a play, man. You're one of many. So I thank you, man. I appreciate you.
For sure.